It's DACA Stories on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This Obama-era policy, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, provides protection from deportation and work permits to undocumented immigrants who arrived in the U.S. as children. And Congress feels pressure to act. A federal judge in Texas recently struck down the program, directing the Biden administration to stop granting new DACA requests. Is your life in limbo with the DACA backlog? It's 800-642-1234. Lupe Salmeron is the West High School Escalera Program Coordinator for Centro Hispano of Dane County. She was born in Mexico City, came to Madison at age six, joining her parents. She has her DACA status, graduated from Edgewood College last year. Lupe, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Good morning. We also have Luis Tapia, who was also born in Mexico City and moved here as an infant, graduated from Horlick High School in Racine in 2019, works as a restaurant cook in process of applying for his DACA status. Luis, welcome to you.
Hi, how's it going?
Going well. Thank you for joining us. Paula Rabadan is here as well, came with her parents from Mexico when she was one, lives in Fond du Lac, is a CNA studying to become a registered nurse, and she's been a DACA recipient since 2016. Paula, welcome to you.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Good morning. So, Paula, let's start with you. Can you tell us about your journey to Wisconsin, what it was like?
Sure. So my family and I actually came to the United States in 2001, and we have been proud to call Wisconsin our home ever since then.
And so what in particular was it like for you to come here? Because you were six, is that right?
I was actually a year old.
Yep. Yeah. So you don't have the memories then of what it was like.
No, unfortunately, all I go off is stories and pictures, which is very saddening to me because I actually have a lot of my family in Mexico. And unfortunately, it's just my parents, myself, my fiance, and now my son and I. So it's really hard for us, you know, having to communicate only through video calls and phone calls. It's definitely not the same as I would as having them in person. So.
And so, Paula, you know, you haven't been able to meet that extended family in person or give them hugs or be able to see where they live.
Correct. Yep. So, yeah. Unfortunately, with the DACA program, we are not allowed to leave the country. And if we were to leave the country, you know, coming back in would be an even more lengthy process. So it's definitely a risk that a lot of us are unfortunately can't take or are not willing to take.
Yeah. Lupe, how about you? Tell us about your journey to the U.S.
I came when I was six. I was reunited with my family, with my parents then. My dad left, he immigrated here when I was around two, and then my mom followed a year later. So I stayed with my grandparents. And I joined them when I was six. I don't really remember much of, like, the actual trip up here.
Mm-hmm.
There's, like, some vague memories here and there. But, yeah, just like Paula, like, I don't have many. Even though I was a little older, I still don't remember much of Mexico or family members.
What about your grandparents?
What about them?
Yeah, do you have fond memories of being with them?
No, very little, very little. Luckily we can FaceTime them now, you know? So that's the only way we've been able to, know like what they look like now, you know, and like meet some other cousins. So that's been nice, but like you said, it's not the same as having them in person.
Yeah. Luis, what is your story? Can you tell us?
It's actually quite the same as Paula. You know, I came to the U.S. when I was less than a year old. And, you know, I don't remember Mexico at all, you know. And the trip over here, I also don't remember. But, you know, most of my dad's side actually lives in Wisconsin. So we have some family over here. That's actually the reason we came to Wisconsin in the first place. But on my mom's side, she doesn't really have that much family. All her family's in Mexico. So knowing I have cousins that are grandparents is actually quite crazy. It's a whole nother side of family that I have no clue about. And probably I won't get to meet for a while.
Where are you at with your DACA status?
So currently I was in the process, I already had my fingerprints scanned. So the last thing they wanted was for more evidence. And I'm currently in the process of trying to send that in. But with the new court order, I don't know if it'll even go through at this point.
And when they say more evidence, what does that mean? Like, how much work has it been to file your application?
It actually has been quite a bit because so throughout my entire childhood, it was actually quite easy because I was in school the entire time. So, just send in the school reports, all of that. But until 2019, which is the year I graduated in, I had basically nothing. Because after I graduated from high school, all I had was my job, but I wasn't getting paid in checks. I was getting paid in cash. Yeah, so it was a real problem trying to identify those years where I had nothing. So I'm currently working with Voces de la Frontera trying to figure out ways I can pass those years, those 2 years that I don't have accounted for. I have pictures with them. They've tried to give me letters stating that I've been helping, but currently, so far, we haven't found that much.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Luis Tapia, a cook, lives in Racine, applying for his DACA status as we've been talking about. Paula Rabadan is a nurse who lives in Fond du Lac, has had her DACA status since 2016. And Lupe Salmeron, who is West High School Escalera Program Coordinator for Centro Hispano of Dane County. Going back to you, Paulo, when DACA began in 2012, what did your family weigh in deciding whether or not to apply for it?
Sure. So I guess with everything, there's a lot of risk, lots of pros and cons with everything. But in our particular case, so my parents actually came to the United States with visas, with tourist visas, I mean. So we entered legally. And in my case, they thought that DACA would benefit me a lot more than it would count against me. So we decided, well, my parents decided at that time, that it would be best to try and see what happens. Because at that point, I was trying to apply for my first job. I was 16. So obviously, without a social security or a driver's license, one can't necessarily even begin the application for looking for a job. So that's definitely what motivated us, as well as getting myself a temporary status. Unfortunately, not a permanent one, but I think a temporary one is better than nothing. So,
Yeah, Lupe, did you worry that you would be putting your parents at risk in applying for DACA?
no, that was something we discussed. But like Paola's family, we saw this as a more of a positive good thing, especially since I was pretty young when the program started. It would help me start, like on a good note, if we were ever able to fix our status. So we definitely saw it as like a positive thing.
We're hearing voices of the DACA program this hour. That was Lupe Salmeron of Madison, Paula Rabadan of Fond du Lac, Luis Tapia of Racine, all came to Wisconsin when they were very, very young. What do you think about DACA? What do you want to ask these three young immigrants about what it's like to live in the country without documentation? Join in, 800-642-1234. We'll talk more in a moment on the Ideas Network. we're hearing stories this hour about DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The program has shielded hundreds of thousands of immigrants who first arrived in the U.S. as children from deportation and allows them to lawfully work, lawfully go to school. President Biden said in a statement last month, only Congress can ensure a permanent solution by granting a path to citizenship for Dreamers. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Lupe Salmeron has her DACA status, is with Centro Hispano of Dane County. Paula Rabadan, a nurse in Fond du Lac, a DACA recipient since 2016. We have Luis Tapia of Racine, started the process of applying for DACA and has run into obstacles along the way. Luis, you know, as you looked at this process and had to get the paperwork together, what did your family consider when deciding whether to apply?
You know, at first, we actually thought it was a really big risk, you know, giving all of our information, not only myself, but, you know, of my parents, of where they worked and where we've lived throughout the entire time we've lived in the U.S. It's actually quite vexing. You know, because at a point, it's just, what if we don't get it? And it's currently my status right now. Like, what if I don't get it? I just recently gave all of our information away to the government. And now we're just waiting to see what happens. Yeah. So it's kind of compelling to know that at any point, you know, again, somebody can just come to our doorstep and just ask to see our status, which is actually kind of crazy.
You know, I'm wondering, Luis, the immigration attorney shortage. There are just not enough immigration attorneys out there to help young people through the process, to help families through the process. Have you sought consultation with an immigration attorney?
Yeah, thank you. Thanks to Voces de la Frontera, I was able to actually get an attorney with Zabrowski Law. They actually were the ones to help me out. They actually sponsored my DACA application and are currently helping me out with the process. So currently they're just saying, let's try to move forward. Let's go from there, because at this point, that's all we can do. Just move forward and see what happens.
I wonder, Lupe and Paula, about the costs of DACA and the, you know, just the impact on the financial side of it. Paula, can you speak to that?
Sure. So DACA is to be renewed once every 2 years now. And then there is a federal fee that we have to pay. Typically, it's $495. And then, as you mentioned, it is optional to bring an attorney to help you with the process. So depending on what they charge, that would be in addition to the $500 for the government.
Have you, in your process with DACA, sought an attorney along the way?
I have. So I've had it for about 6-8 years now. And I've actually seen a new attorney every 2 years, which I know they don't recommend, but I have definitely gotten a lot of help along the way.
Lupe, what about the cost for you and your family?
Definitely takes a toll, especially since, you know, you have to renew it every 2 years. And, you know, like Paula said, added lawyer fees, because we too did seek out help from a lawyer. So it does get to be a lot, especially, you know, if, you know, for me, my parents were helping me and they have other, you know, financial responsibilities. So it takes a toll. But it's worth it in a sense, you know, to have that work permit and some sense of security.
What do you see it opening up for you to do? What is that? You know, what does it mean?
Oh, man. Well, I applied for it when it first came out in 2012. I was around 15 and a half, which is the age you have to be in order to apply for it. And I was so excited, you know, watching the press conference that Obama had and hearing about it, just all the opportunities that I would be able to have. And honestly, I thank DACA for a lot of the opportunities I have had, you know, both with working throughout my teenage years, and thus being able to afford going to college, and being able to stay and graduate. And now, you know, being able to work at a nonprofit, I don't know where I would be without DACA.
What was it like working with your college through this process?
So it's very tricky. So even with DACA, you don't have a status, right? Mm. You still don't have a legal status, right? So that means you still don't have access to FAFSA, which means you don't have access to government funding or any of those kinds of loans. So just kind of on your own, it's really up to the universities to work with students on how they want to, you know, go about it. Luckily, private schools are a little more flexible with how they use their funding, which is why I decided to go to Edgewood. But that process wasn't too bad. I was connected to several people at Edgewood that helped me along the way.
Meanwhile, you graduated from Edgewood College in the pandemic, and that too, and I want to ask all of you about the pandemic. I can't imagine how difficult that has been. Lupe, you first. What was that like to graduate?
It was very interesting. It kind of, you know, it was supposed to be this grand, you know, moment, since I am the first in my family to graduate from college. You know, it was supposed to be this big celebration, and it wasn't. You know, you just kind of were like, all right, well, I'm done with school. Now what? And the now what was an even bigger question, because jobs were scarce. You know, there was nothing really out there at the peak of the pandemic. So it was definitely scary.
Yeah. Paula Rabadan in Fond du Lac, what has the pandemic been like for you and your family?
Unfortunately, it has definitely taken a toll on us, you know, not only financially, but mentally as well. I think we were lucky enough to keep our jobs. A lot of people don't know that DACA recipients are essential workers. A lot of us do work in, you know, different industries. We still serve the community through the pandemic. And unfortunately, a lot of our parents didn't benefit from any of the government aid that was spread through the pandemic. So that definitely affected my family and I.
What about the healthcare risk? I mean, as a nurse, I would imagine that also was weighing on you. You needed to do the work, and yet you weren't getting a lot of that federal aid.
Yeah, I didn't want to take credit for being a nurse, so I'm a student nurse right now.
Okay, yeah.
So if everything goes well, I'll be graduating next year. But yeah, unfortunately, classes were shut down, so we were doing classes through Zoom. We were seeing a lot more sick patients than normal. And right now, you know, with the new strain going around, we are seeing even vaccinated people getting the disease. And I think all I can say is definitely, you know, I know it's a personal choice. So whatever you decide, you know, decide what's best for your family. Be safe, you know, practice safe hand hygiene, avoid crowds, and those kinds of things.
Yeah. Luis Tapia in Racine, what has the pandemic brought for you and your family?
It was definitely a challenge. You know, at the peak when everything closed down, we all lost our jobs. No, we didn't lose them, but, you know, it had to close down. So nobody was working at the moment. So that really took a toll on us. After everything started to open up back a little bit, slowly by slowly, I was actually the first one to get my job back. So at that point, I was the one trying to support my family, you know, trying to pay some bills, trying to get some food on the table. But after a while, everybody started to get their jobs back due to the country starting to open back up. But at the moment, it was actually quite difficult knowing if if this will happen again, if the country would close down due to another spike in the pandemic, or if we'd lose our jobs again. So at that moment, we had to think about of another way to start saving money, or like how to earn money. Yeah. So at that point, we were really scared, because like they said, we didn't necessarily get any funding from the government. Thanks to Voces de la Frontera, they had a sponsorship, which actually gave us some money. My parents did qualify, and so did my brothers.
Let's pause there with Luis Tapia from Racine Cook, Paula Rabadan, a CNA in Fond du Lac, Lupe Salmarón, high school program coordinator in Madison. You can be part of this conversation about DACA, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update on the Ideas Network. We're hearing DACA stories on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. These are people who moved to the U.S. as children, thought they'd have a pathway to citizenship when the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, program was created 9 years ago. And in years since, they've lived through the shifting political policies, the court battles, the anti-immigrant rhetoric, especially in the Trump administration. What policies do you want the Biden administration to focus on for pathways to citizenship? It's 800-642-1234 to join. Paula Rabadan of Fond du Lac came with her parents from Mexico when she was an infant. Luis Tapia, born in Mexico City, also moved here when he was an infant. And Lupe Salmarón's parents had a friend fly her to the U.S. when Lupe was six. They're with us for the hour. I want to ask you about the rhetoric from the President Trump when he ran for office. Some really harsh rhetoric against immigrants, calling people from Mexico murderers, drug dealers, other names. Also pledged to build that wall along the Mexico border. Paula, how did this rhetoric affect you?
I think the day that President Donald Trump got elected was one of the most devastating days in the Hispanic community. I think for my family and I, you know, it didn't feel real for a while, only because we didn't want to accept it. I think knowing that one person, you know, has complete power over your future, and, you know, he kept putting more and more limitations to our abilities, was definitely overwhelming.
Mm. What about you, Luis?
It definitely turned the country upside down. You know, it brought up people that you didn't know were truly racist to the core. But President Trump did that. He brought up people that would call out other people, you know, for their own color, for their own status. And it was quite crazy to see that the country we lived in was so terrible. But, you know, that those are the harsh things we have to endure to keep living in this country, to keep living, moving forward.
Lupe, what did that rhetoric and those actions do to you? What did they make you feel?
Very similar to everyone else. You know, it was another, a lot of fear, uncertainty, definitely a lot of uncertainty, you know, given his whole stance on immigration. We didn't know what he was capable of doing in terms of immigration and what that meant for us and our families. It was a lot of, you know, waiting to see exactly what his actions meant for us. And it wasn't even just, you know, like fear of him, but like Luis said, it was also what he unleashed in his followers and all the hatred that came from them. And his words, you know, his words, very anti-immigrant rhetoric, and how that opened up this whole floodgate of anti-immigrant people.
I wonder, Lupe, did that filter into your life and into your relationships with people?
Not in Madison, not so much. Madison is a pretty progressive liberal city. So there's a lot of support here for the immigrant community. Mm-hmm. So not me directly. But it, you know, I did see it, you know, in the media and just how, we were portrayed. So, you know, it was more of a national level, not here. I didn't experience it personally.
Paula, what about you? How has your community been for you as you live and work to become a nurse?
Sure. I think I would have to agree with Lupe, which is why I definitely continue to, you know, educate people and inform them. I think a lot of the times these people don't necessarily know everything that goes behind closed doors, and they have all these questions that are too afraid to ask. So which is why I'm definitely an open book with everyone. My dad is actually, shout out to him, he's a huge advocate here in the Fond du Lac community as well. He is part of certain clubs and members that he actually speaks about his own personal story. You know, he, for the longest time, he talks about not necessarily hiding behind the shadows, but putting your story out there so that a lot more people can relate and bring a lot more people forward to educate people who don't know what's going on or anything about us, really.
Yeah. So really, you sort of followed in those types of footsteps as to being very open about your past and what you have experienced.
Yeah, I get it from my dad.
I wonder, you know, Luis, we touched on this a little bit earlier, but the federal judge in Texas ruled that DACA is unconstitutional and argued that President Obama had overstepped his authority in creating it. And you've seen that the ruling is being appealed, but how often do you think about the possibility of you and your family being deported?
It's something that goes on throughout our mind every day. You know, that's never a question of if or what. You know, it's like, how can we prevent something like that happening? You know, trying to stay good citizens in the place we live. You know, just being regular people trying to do ordinary things throughout our lives. You know, because at any point of just being like stopped by the police, you know, for any kind of reason, for like unlicensed vehicle, don't have a driver's license, you know, being stopped by the police is just tremendously scary for us, because at that point it's just like, are we gonna get deported?
So you feel like one small misstep could spiral out of control.
Exactly. So at any given point, you know, any mistake can lead to us being deported. So that's why we have to be careful every time we step out of our home. So that's why home is truly the one place we can be safe. But even then, like, home isn't exactly safe to begin with.
I'm going to reintroduce you all. We're talking with three young immigrants who've received or are applying for DACA. Luis Tapia from Racine there. Paula Rabadan lives in Fond du Lac. And Lupe Salmeron from Madison. You can join in. What are your thoughts on President Trump's efforts to build a wall along the Mexico border? Do you worry that undocumented immigrants could take American jobs? What do you want to ask these immigrants about their life and their journey? 800-642-1234. Lupe, I want to hear from you as well, whether you have ever had those conversations about the possibility of deportation and what your family's ever said about that.
Yeah, for sure. Similarly to what Luis said, you're kind of always on your toes. You know, you have to be the best version of yourself that you can be, both inside and outside. You know, immigrant communities don't typically trust the police. We don't go to them. We don't see them as a safe or, you know, a protector, like a lot of other communities do, you know, due to our status. So we have to kind of tiptoe around everything, and especially with not having a driver's license, you know, just a simple traffic stop could lead to deportation, and that's what has happened to a lot of immigrants. So having that in mind, it is scary, you know, for family members to drive, you know, outside of Madison, where we don't really know what the political climate is or what their local legislation is. So it's definitely always on our mind. You know, it's like we hold our family close because we don't really know what's going to happen tomorrow or the next week.
Yeah, it feels very day to day, just not knowing. Paula, how about you? Has your family discussed that D word, deportation?
Yeah, unfortunately, that has been a conversation in our household for years now. Fortunately, my sister was actually born in the United States. Within this next year, we were praying for an immigration reform so that my parents can actually start the process, you know, towards becoming a citizen. Unfortunately for me, it will be a couple more years. Definitely praying for something with the Joe Biden administration.
Paula, I understand you have a young son. Have you made plans for what you would do or what you have thought about with your son?
Yeah, he's actually only two. So lucky for us, we do have my fiance and I have both of our parents here. So if anything were to happen, we know that he would be in good hands. So,
yeah, I wonder, Luis, when you look at the border and people trying to cross the border and risking life and limb to do that, what are your thoughts there on immigration policy as it stands at our southern border?
You know, it's actually kind of inspiring to know that you have to go through all these risks, not knowing whether you're going to live or die, just trying to cross the border. You know, it's something that my parents had to endure just to give us a better life, and which is what most of them are trying to do. They're trying to cross the border to enter a better life, to support their family, or to even support themselves, to just keep going on with life.
Yeah. Paula, when you look at what the situation is like at the southern border, what goes through your mind?
Yeah, similar to what Lee said, it's just, it's sad, it's devastating. I wish there was more that we can do. I did want to say that what anyone else can do is continue to, you know, be proactive in our communities, participate in your local marches, continue to reach out to your representatives, and, you know, let them know that you stand with DACA and immigrant essential workers. That's the only thing that we can do, and hope for a change in the future.
We're hearing the stories of dreamers, many of whom grew up in America, can call no other country home. We have Paula Rabadan there, who's working toward becoming a registered nurse. We've been talking with Lupe San Lorón of Centro Hispano of Dane County, Luis Tapia, a restaurant cook, and you can join in. Are you a DACA beneficiary? What concerns you most about the future of U.S. immigration policy? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's DACA Stories here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to the American Immigration Council, Wisconsin is home to thousands of DACA recipients, the program protecting undocumented immigrants who came to the U.S. as children. We're hearing from several this hour, Paula Rabadan, Luis Tapia, and Lupe Salmarone, all of Wisconsin, since they were very, very young, and they're with us for about 10 more minutes. Let's go to Connie now in Portage. Hi, Connie. What would you like to bring up?
Hi. I just feel so bad for these children. I really do. I'm an immigrant. Everybody in this country is an immigrant, unless they were Indian. And I wish our audience would remember that. And all I keep thinking about is my family came from Ireland. And I wonder, and I know in New York, they went through a lot of the same type of thing. And I feel just so bad because this country is so huge and there's so much room for everybody. I went to Europe and it's so small and they still don't treat people like we do. And as far as Trump is concerned, I wouldn't even want to start to go there. He's an evil person. But I just will pray for you and let you know that there are a lot of people that love you.
Paula, I'll let you respond first to Connie.
Hi, Connie. Thank you so much for the support. You know, I completely agree with you. This country was definitely founded by immigrants. You know, we're definitely the backbone of this country. And a lot of people don't know that we actually do contribute to the community and the economy just as much as the next person. So I wish that everyone had the same views as you, but unfortunately, that is not the world we live in. So As I mentioned before, you know, just continuing to educate people and remind them each and every day that there is room for everyone here and that we will continue to prove our worth and keep fighting.
Luis, have you heard sentiment like what Connie had to say?
Quite often, you know, it's very motivational to know that there are people trying to help us out and just there are allies. But most of the time, there's also other people, you know, trying to just trip us over and just say mean things. But usually we ignore it because when there's such positive feedback from other people, it's truly emotional to know that they just have our backs. And if anything goes down, we can go to them and they'll protect us as well.
I want to ask you, Lupe, about the nonprofit community, because that is where you work. I'm wondering how Centro Hispano has lifted up or helped the immigrant community.
Yeah, for sure. So Centro Hispano specifically works with Latinx families here in the Dane County area. So that is our focus. And as you know, immigration is a huge part of it. So we have different departments working, you know, with families from case management. We have a specified immigration person who helps people with questions regarding immigration or helps them find the resources for any kind of, you know, like a lawyer or any other immigration related issue. So we're very, you know, we try our best to stay informed on what those needs are and also doing outreach, you know, to those vulnerable communities.
Lupe, do you feel like the needs are greater than what your organization can offer?
Oh, for sure. As you know, nonprofits typically don't have a lot of funding, you know, so it's like we can only do so much and we don't have, you know, like a certified lawyer working with us. So the needs are definitely huge, especially with the whole DACA thing. You know, now the needs are huge. You know, that's why there's a shortage of immigration attorneys. Like, we need so many more out there.
Let's go to Suzanne in River Falls. Suzanne, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Say, I don't know if it's much of a question, more of a comment. From listening to your guests, it sounds like they didn't have a lot of negativity attached to them, and they're not feeling a lot of that negativity. It seems very positive. Do you think that most of the United States feels that way? And it's just a lot of media hype. We always talk about the media and how difficult they can be and how negative they can be. Do you feel that a lot of what is happening is more media hype than what we truly are feeling as a country?
Luis, you first.
Well, no, because as soon as we step out this our homes, you can always encounter anybody, even your neighbor, that can say something to you. Also, at this point, it's not just the media. You can go to any store, you can go, and there's going to be somebody fighting. It's not just negativity throughout the media. The media is also not wrong. There's actually people that will go up to you and talk a lot of stuff about the color of your skin. And it's not just us trying to stay positive, but we are trying to be positive, because at this point, what else can you do other than just stay positive?
Yeah. I'm wondering, Paula, for you, do you see that the risks, the challenges that you and your family have incurred through immigration, has that experience been distorted or inflated?
Yeah, I mean, I would have to agree with Luis. We have experienced, you know, negativity both in person and online. You know, someone behind a screen for some reason has a lot more to say than someone in person. And I think a lot of that has to do with confrontation. You know, the media nowadays, it plays a huge role in everything. So obviously, a lot of people get their news from the media. I wish that a lot more people would, you know, sit down with with any one of us and listen to our side of the story for a change and not just what someone is saying through a screen.
Lupe, do you want to add anything about that perception?
Yes, actually, that is a really good point that was made by the person who asked the question. And that, you know, comes with the whole DACA program. One of the viewpoints that people have on DACA is that it, you know, it gives this like perfect immigrant narrative, which is what Dreamers, you know, DACA recipients are seen like. You know, we're seen as like, oh, you know, the perfect immigrant, they're just here through no fault of their own. It was their parents' fault. They're just here to work and go to school and contribute to the economy. But it's like, that's a very negative and harmful, you know, narrative to, you know, bring
it
out.
It seems very narrow.
Exactly. And, you know, it's more about humanizing other immigrant experiences, like our families. Okay, yes, they did, you know, break a few laws, but it's like, do you know why they came here? Do you know why they left their country, their families, everything they knew behind to come to this foreign country that they, you know, where they don't know the language? Like, it goes beyond that, you know, and it's all about humanizing those experiences. That's why a lot of organizations are calling for a Clean Dream Act. Essentially, it's kind of taking out that negative narrative around older immigrants and immigrants who aren't able to go to school here and aren't here to study, you know, and like become, you know, be in that capacity. They're just here to work and give the children a better life, which is our parents. You know, and we have to step away from that perfect immigrant narrative because it's harmful, especially to our parents and other older immigrants.
I want to ask each of you, because our time is very scarce here, but about your dreams for the future. And Paula, you first.
For in terms of immigration or my personal
life? Your personal path to citizenship, yeah.
Yeah, well, I hope to one day become a citizen. Hopefully, I don't have to wait till my son is 21. but I do hope, you know, to be a registered nurse if everything goes well this coming year. I do want to, you know, live in the States. So hopefully, you know, build our own house, settle down here in the States. And then if there is an immigration reform, obviously be able to visit family, you know. Yeah. People that I haven't seen in years or people that I actually haven't even met yet. So
very quickly, Luis, your dream.
Well, my dream is to one day open up a business, but it's also for my parents to have their own kind of citizenship because they were the ones that gave us our dreams to begin with.
Lupe.
Similarly to them, you know, still being able to call the U.S. Wisconsin home and, you know, just to keep growing in my career.
Thank you all for joining us. Luis Tapia, we had Paula Rabadan and Lupe Salmarone. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.